And welcome back. Big story of Rents.com at the top of featured stories all day long on this 40th anniversary celebration time of the alleged Apollo landing on the moon and all the rest of the program's accomplishments and achievements that may or may not have occurred after that. Talked about in its initial phases, the landing itself, by Jay Widener. Jay is a friend of ours and a friend of yours. He is, of course, the maestro at sacredmysteries.com. He's written an article up at the top called How Stanley Kubrick Faked the Apollo Moon Landings. Now, some of you may look at that and dismiss it as more silliness. Don't. Read it. Read it carefully, study it, think about it, look at the pictures, and then make a decision. A lot of people have, and the mail has been overwhelming. Jay, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Jeff, it's good to be back, and you're right, the mail has been overwhelming.
How overwhelming has it been?
Well,
How's it running?
Well, we should hit a million hits in about an hour or so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's overwhelming. How's it running, though? Have they read the story? Do they think about it before they write, or are you getting a lot of knee-jerk emotional responses?
No, actually, I've only gotten one. One guy from New York City said that I was an anal cavity, but other than that, it's been completely positive.
But I would come from New York, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
sorry.
That's what I thought.
And, there are many nice people in New York, but silly.
Yeah.
Okay, now, what got you involved in this in the first place? And then I'm not going to go through the story in detail. I'm going to urge all of you folks out there to please read it and pass it around. That's the best way to do it because we can't describe pictures too well on the radio. But we'll have Jay tell us what it is about this whole Apollo thing that got you interested. Where did you get your information? And how sure are we that Stanley K. was intimately involved with this whole hoax?
Well, of course, it's all circumstantial except for the hardwired evidence, which is the front screen projection evidence, which I present, I think, for the first time ever.
Never seen it anywhere else, Jay. He did a great job. Yeah.
Yeah, and the telltale fingerprints that are within that cinematic process called front screen projection. And I actually discovered it about 4 or 5 years ago while viewing 2001 A Space Odyssey and then getting on the web and looking at some Apollo images, but it really had started in 1992. I got involved with a big investigation into the moon, and I was actually writing a book about NASA and interviewing top people in NASA who were talking to me and talking to me quite frankly about everything, and including rocket scientists who told me that it was impossible to have landed and taken off from the moon, and a lot of other people. And I knew there was something wrong and there was some high weirdness about the whole thing, but really what happened was it culminated when I got this, what I thought was a brilliant idea at the time. I went to one of the top investment firms in America. I had 5 minutes to present my investment idea to them. And so I presented it, and my idea was to make an IMAX feature film called Return to the Moon, in which we would launch a rocket to the moon with 3D digital cameras, and we would make a 45-minute IMAX film called Return to the Moon. And these guys, these top guys, who if I said their name, you'd know who they were, they just loved this idea and even brought a fairly big film director in to do it.
Uh-huh.
And everything was going swimmingly well when the lawyer that they hired to do diligence on my idea, i.e. find out if they could really launch a thing and build it and everything at the price I was saying, which I knew I was right, he called the head of NASA and told them that we were planning on doing this. And the head of NASA told him that they would blow the rocket out of the sky, that no one was going to the moon, and that never call him again. And he was a friend of the guys. So I realized that there was a massive cover-up going on, and I wondered what it was about. And I was intrigued, and I've had my life threatened over this, and I persevered. And I realized that, eventually, I realized that there was a secret space program and that they had the ability to go to the moon several times a day if they wanted.
Wow.
But they wanted us to believe in the standard rocket scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I have no problem with a rocket going from the Earth to the moon or from the moon to the Earth. I realize that standard rocket technology can do that. My problem with the whole Apollo thing is getting from lunar orbit to the surface and back. That is extremely improbable. The fact that they tested the lunar lander on Earth one time and Neil mm-hmm. Armstrong crashed it.
Mm-hmm.
So they did one physical test with the lunar lander and it failed on Earth, yet when they went to the moon, it succeeded six times. And that just, anyone who works with systems or technology knows there's always going to be huge problems.
I've heard that before, and I still laugh about that. One failed test here, and there's six for six on the moon.
Yeah, and a rocket scientist named Bill Woods, who I think worked for the Apollo, was one of the first people that told me he didn't buy it. And the reason he told me that he didn't buy it was that he had developed a system for landing rockets here on Earth, and he presented it to a major corporation, and they accepted his plans, and they were going forward with it. And they're one of the big companies that worked on Apollo, and the president of the company said, geez, this will be the first time that mankind has soft-landed. And then he said, well, no, that's not true. We've soft-landed six times already on the moon. And the guy burst out laughing. So these things are, you know, I don't think it's that big of a secret, but I really did want to see if there was any external evidence that proved it one way or another. And my conclusion after seeing the trickery in 2001, the cinematic trickery that Kubrick used, I realized that the same exact trickery was going on in the Apollo imagery. I also realized that Stanley Kubrick was the number one technical guy for this particular cinematic technique called front screen projection, and that 2001, A Space Odyssey, his great film, had taken place concurrently with the Apollo program, and the number one science advisor for 2001, A Space Odyssey, was the number one science advisor for the Apollo missions, Frederick Ordway, and then I knew that there was something else going on. Of course, Arthur C. Clarke, the co-writer, have many, many links with NASA. And one day I started going through the Apollo imagery, and I realized that the telltale evidence was there. There's always a line between the set and the screen in every picture. No matter how far and wide you go, you'll find it. And reached the conclusion years ago, actually, and finally decided to come out with it on the 40th anniversary, because I think Stanley really did want people to know that he did it, and he was very frustrated that really probably his greatest film was not really being attributed to him, and it sort of irritated him, I think, a little bit.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, it would irritate me
Okay. What did he build into, if anything, into the landing footage that he basically produced and directed, according to your view of it, that gave us a clue that he was leaving his mark? All great artists, many great artists, kind of leave their mark somewhere or another on their creation. What did he do, if anything? Have you found anything yet?
Well, he left behind telltale clues that have irritated researchers for years. One of them is, of course, the shadows all over the moon that don't match, not running in the same angles.
That's embarrassing.
And also, I think he really did want people to understand the front screen projection process and that he was doing it. And, you know, another thing that comes up here is that this might be a generational thing, because the generation that's running NASA right now may not even know that the whole thing was fake. And because I can't understand why they didn't run the images through Photoshop software somewhere in the last 10, 15 years since it's been invented and blur out those lines. And they didn't, and that tells me that they don't know. And so if you go and look, you'll see that there's never an unblocked view of the lunar landscape. There's always a line right behind the action scene where there's a different kind of granularity.
Got it. It changes texture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a clearly defined line of demarcation where you've got rough textured material on the ground in the front, and then it changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious and very clear. And there are no stars, and we've heard the rest. The shadows are downright embarrassing. Now, Kubrick was a genius, but still, the lighting people made mistakes.
They did.
And they're there. They're there. Again, it's right at the top of Rents.com featured stories. Mr. Jay Widener is our guest, and we'll be right back. Do read the story. Now, there's some people say it was all a hoax. Some people say we went there every time and it was as shown to the world. It happened. You're somewhere in the middle, which makes sense. Do you think, well, let me rephrase that. How many times do you think we actually may have made it to the moon and back, i.e. landed on the moon and then took off again? Let's start right there.
Hundreds of times.
Okay. With the technology purported to have been used by Apollo and the teams involved with that.
Okay. Never.
Okay.
I can't buy it. I don't buy it. I'm a technical guy. I love technology, and I know that technology is a harsh mistress, and if you don't
you can
test it,
it's a black widow.
It out,
it'll kill you.
It will kill you. And
yeah,
there's
and
no way. Nothing.
No.
Nothing can be that pristine.
All you've got to do now, Kubrick, if he was involved with setting up the lunar lander on that soundstage and taking those color plates that we've all seen, how could he have missed the fact that a dusty lunar surface would have kicked up one hell of a hole? How many thousand pound thrust was the lander, that engine, which slowed it down?
It was very high. Wernher von Braun said in a press conference in the mid-60s that it would blast a hole 8 feet into the surface of hard granite.
Hard ground.
And that the biggest obstacle they faced was shrapnel hitting the
being
the
blown up off out of the crater, the blast crater,
adds more credibility to the fact it was hoaxed, because not only is there not a crater, not only is there no scorch marks,
nothing underneath it at all. Folks.
No,
nothing.
it's never been tested, and even the chief scientist, who is a brilliant scientist, admitted that it was very dubious at all. And I think soft landings of rocketry actually might even be impossible, just because of the shrapnel flying around and hitting things. And
well,
so I don't know. I don't know why Kubrick didn't put the blast hole in. I think that it was another.
Maybe that's one of the things I was mentioning earlier.
Yeah, I think
maybe he left that for posterity.
I think he did it on purpose. I think he wanted people to know that it was fake, and he wanted people to know that he did it. And you know, there's probably going to be other clues. What I'm hoping from the article, what I'm sure is going to happen from that article.
Oh, you're going to get a lot of information.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of filmmakers and film technicians, and they're already writing me, are going to start looking at the Apollo material and see things that I haven't seen. And then I think it's going to break completely loose. I really do. I've not had any refutation of the screen, the front projection screen. Pretty much Everyone agrees.
No one can touch it, Jay. It's right there.
And
it's obvious.
So now the next step is to break it loose in another, you know, other ways. And
well, let me say one thing, if I might. Hold your thought. We want to honor, I think, the first man, one of the first men to come forward with this idea that it was a hoax. There was one man in the late 70s. I can't remember his name. I had
Bill
him on
Kasing.
The first. Bill Kasing. I had William on the program two or three times.
Yep.
Bill Kasing was a very brave man. And then there was a guy in New York, I think, or somewhere in New England, named Ralph Rene. He went simply
Ralph.
By... Ralph's gone now. He passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he did. He died about, I think, less than a year ago. He committed suicide.
You're breaking my heart.
I'm sorry.
I knew Ralph. I had a lot of phone conversations with him.
Yeah, brilliant man. Absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant.
He sent me his own personal copy of his book. His own.
Yeah.
I have it. In which he has all the plates, the colors, the photography, the lighting angles, and all that. And it's right there, house copy, his home copy. Anyway, he was next. Then there were others. Then we had things like the documentary, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, right?
And he died.
And then we have the guy who went after all the astronauts to interview them and ask them if they would put their hand on a Bible and swear that they landed. Remember that?
I do.
It's on YouTube. You can see it.
Yep.
And so we have I won't say a preponderance, but it's damn close to a preponderance of evidence that something very wrong exists in the Apollo moon landing stories, all of them.
First you have to understand that, you know, that we have extremely advanced technology. And one of the things that I would really like to correct in the historical record is the incredible number of inventions that the Germans accomplished from 1930 to 1944.
Unprecedented in modern human history.
Lasers,
absolutely.
Television, saucer technologies, anti-gravity technologies, silicon chip. I mean, it's amazing.
Radar reflecting stealth aircraft,
yes.
Jet engines. I mean, on and on and on.
In 14 years,
they
did more than the United States has done in 100. And of course, they're not given any credit for it.
Well, they're always called Nazis.
Everybody else is taking credit for it.
They're always called Nazis. They're not called German scientists. Now, most of them were not members of the party, hated the party, and all the rest of it. These were human beings. It's really, I think, it's a very grave disservice to humankind to discount their genius because they happen to be ruled by an oppressive regime.
Exactly, and I really want to correct this historical record as much as I can. And, I mean, it may even be true. Joseph Farrell contends that the three atom bombs that were used by the United States, one at Trinity and then the two on Japan, were actually stolen from the Nazis, and that they—that's why they named it the Manhattan Project, because the Germans were, Hitler was actually planning on nuking Manhattan.
How interesting!
And they raided it, Wiesbaden, and the United States and Britain did, and they stole the three atom bombs.
How wild! Hold
so
on.
So Oppenheimer and
yeah,
all
hold
the
on,
boys,
Jay. We have to break. We'll come right back and pick it up. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Jay Widener, who has written a remarkable story and illustrated it. It's at topofrents.com in featured stories. You can go right there, click on it, and have a good read. It's pretty tough to dismiss all of this very serious evidence that something grievously wrong exists with the Apollo 11 story and all the rest of the Apollo missions as well. All right, Jay, go ahead, please.
Well, yeah, the thing is that, you know...
So, but by the way, three atomic bombs stolen from Wiesbaden flown over here in time to be delivered, I guess, for the one test, the Trinity test, and then the two dropped on the civilian populations in the two cities in Japan.
Yeah, and apparently in this, you know, they may have had inside help in Germany, and it has even been postulated that one of the things that the Germans asked for was that they don't use those on Germans. So instead, Churchill, you know, bombed Dresden and killed 500,000 people in one night without using nuclear bombs.
Well, but, actually, two or three nights, but whatever.
Yeah,
thanks
over,
for mentioning that, because
500,000 people, the biggest slaughter.
There's that's right. There's a testimony of how just this great war was. I mean, the whole thing's a sham. I want to know more about the stolen atomic bomb scenario. It's very interesting, and would explain why the Germans didn't. They had all the technology. Some people suggested that a heavy water plant was bombed by the British, and that slowed the program down. Some suggested the Germans had a number of tactical, if you will, warheads sitting on railroad flat cars at the end of the war when they were overrun in the east, ready to be used. But they never did use them, so there are a lot of rumors running around.
Well, they had a secret in Czechoslovakia in the mountains. They had a super secret space program going on, high-tech flying saucer program going
right.
on, and it may even have been done with approval in some ways from the shadow governments of the West.
Could have been.
You know, the Nazis.
They'd want that technology to continue to be developed, of course.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note that no Nazi ever signed a surrender treaty with anyone. It was a German a general in the German army who signed the surrender papers,
mm-hmm.
but no National Socialist did. And in fact, it looks like the Nazis were given the lower third of South America on both sides of the Andes in Chile and Argentina, where they were allowed to continue building these flying saucers. And I think all with the knowledge and approval of the United States and Russia. And so I think that there's actually a third force that maybe we don't know about that was using all of this as a gigantic research project.
It is. Why did Byrd go to the Antarctic?
Exactly. Why did he go to the Antarctic? And why doesn't anyone talk about what he said?
It wasn't a wild goose chase, folks. They sent a task force, carriers, everything else down there into the ice and cold for a reason.
And it looks like he got his butt kicked in.
It does. Yeah.
And, I mean, he came back much sooner than he was supposed to.
Right.
And his son, you know, reports that he would talk about things that he saw there that were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's something really big actually going on here that we don't know about. And I think it has to do with an ancient prophecy that was discovered in the Indian texts describing a huge amount of coronal mass ejections that will occur
mm-hmm.
at the end of a certain time period.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nazis were incredibly interested in all of this. I mean, people don't realize that Hitler actually visited the Cross of Hende and in 1940 and went right up to it and had a conversation with someone about it in Hende, France.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cross of Hende is talking about coronal mass ejections at the end of time. So I don't know what's going on, but I think that that we're seeing the traces of a gigantic research project building secret space stations out in space and possibly even terraforming Mars and all sorts of wacky stuff that I'm a little bit reluctant to get into because it's so crazy. But when you understand that that might be happening,
mm-hmm.
suddenly the fakery of Apollo 11, 12, 13... 14, 15, 16, 17, becomes apparent.
Well, it makes sense. Sure, logic to it.
Yeah, they needed to hide this stuff.
The whole NASA public program has been a parallel cover-up for an awful lot of black ops things. And how much money do they have, folks? As much as they want. It's real simple.
It cost $40 billion to send a man to the moon six times. Okay? At the highest estimate that I can come up with
mm-hmm.
is that Kubrick may have spent a total of maybe $50 million on doing the effects and doing 2001: A Space Odyssey. So where do the other $39,950,000,000 go?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is it went into this black ops project. This gigantic,
so much money
super
has gone in there,
secret,
sure. Yeah.
Space program is all, right, I can call it. And if you've ever, you know,
well,
you
look at Gary McKinnon.
Pictures.
Look at McKinnon.
Yeah. And
there's another big detail right out there in the open, folks.
That's right. And he discovered the truth, and now he's going to pay for it for the rest of his life. And this is much bigger than anyone can really
realize. What do we think, Jay, happened to Kubrick's number one and number two and the people who were involved with this? I guess they were told, you talk, you die, your family dies, your next of kin die, your great-grandchildren die, and that kind of thing.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Pretty easy to keep people quiet, but there were rumors that two or three of the key people that worked with Kubrick died on his regular films, died. I can't remember the details now, but his widow, still alive now, absolutely refuses to discuss this, apparently, in any way with anyone.
Well, no, that's true, and I sent her my article. So
good for you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how she responds. She did respond to me over my Alchemical Kubrick article, which came out 10 years ago, and said that Stanley would have approved. So I think that she is probably happy that I did it, because probably she's the only person that Stanley told straight out that he was doing it, and because she had to know.
He pulled off, I can't say the hoax of the century, because there is at least one other hoax that comes to mind that merits a great deal of investigation, but he probably pulled off the second biggest hoax of the century, if not the first, I don't know. And then you've got the Federal Reserve talk about another hoax. Oh, by the way, the approximate to date amount of the so-called bailout that you and I, folks, and your great-great-great-great-grandchildren are going to be paying for, to date, so far, is in excess of $24 trillion.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in deep and serious trouble.
Well, we're in so much trouble that it's not fixable. We know it has to be taken apart and started all over again. That's how they play the game. They just tear down the building, break up the gambling devices, and build a new castle somewhere. Eee, amazing. Jay's article is full of a lot of a great history, interesting insights. Do read it. We'll be right back. Armstrong said no thanks to attending the 40th. Interesting development there. You can read into it, I guess, what you will, but there are a lot of folks who say he's just not real comfortable with continuing to lie. I'm not saying he is, but that's one of the theories floating around out there.
Well,
tell
he was
us more,
a Jay. Very convincing liar.
No, he didn't convince me. Remember them sitting on that little dais, that news conference?
Oh, my God.
It looked like three men who had just been basically sentenced to 20 years in Alcatraz.
They did. Not an ounce of joy among them.
No,
they
no.
Accomplished, you know,
none. They looked terrible. I mean, you just... Come on. That's the antithesis of the expressions and the emotions that should have been there. And no one seemed to notice it at the time. I mean...
It's very interesting because the next film that Stanley did was A Clockwork Orange, in which... you know, it's about a guy who is mind-controlled to get ill every time he thinks of something that the mind controllers don't want him to think about, right? Okay, so mm-hmm. Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon, wrote a book called Return to Earth, in which he describes going to the first year anniversary of the Apollo landings in Vegas, and somebody asks him when he's up on stage, come on, Buzz, tell us what really happened on the moon. And in the book, you can read it for yourself, he talks about how he suddenly got nauseated, he had to throw up, he had to run off the stage and go into an alley where he vomited for about 20 minutes. And I'm afraid to say, but Buzz was Clockwork Orange.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Mitchell of mm-hmm. Apollo 14 fame,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
he went to a friend of mine, Robert Masters, who is now deceased, who was a hypnotherapist, and asked him to hypnotize him. And when Bob Masters asked him why he wanted to be hypnotized, he told him that he couldn't remember what happened on the moon, and he wanted to remember. And Bob Masters spent many, many hours hypnotizing him and could not discover what it was that Ed Mitchell had done on the moon. So Ed Mitchell doesn't even remember being on the moon.
Erased.
He wasn't on the moon. That's why.
That's the point. It was erased in his mind, but there was nothing there to erase. So they put some kind of a... Yeah, you follow me. Okay, this is very interesting. I'd never heard that before.
Yep.
And what about all this talk about... Was Ed Mitchell the one who was supposedly involved in that experiment, that
yes.
telepathic experiment from the moon?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that was...
It was probably just some kind of plant, implant or something.
Easily
in his brain.
Done. Yeah, they can do it all.
Yeah, so he thinks he's doing a telepathic mm-hmm. thing, but really his memory is being completely wiped clean of everything.
So this fellow you knew, this hypnotist, was brass tacks, the real deal, and this was no joke. None.
Absolutely not. He wrote about it in his book. Mm-hmm. Ed Mitchell's admitted that he went to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the world's most famous hypnotherapists.
Mm-hmm.
And he personally told me the story. Bob Masters did before he died.
Got it.
And said that, you know, Ed Mitchell was a very troubled guy about all of this.
What did Ralph René have to say about all this in terms of how long he thought that the charade could last? I mean, he was the guy, and William Kasing, of course, Bill. They pointed out all the shadows. It's just embarrassing. One of the rocks has an initial, was it a W on it?
No, a C.
C, that's right. C, a C.
Like C, right?
Exactly.
In fact, that is one. If you look at Renee's book and look at that photograph, that is one of the most revealing photographs for front projection.
Sure.
It's just impossible to believe that no one saw it. And I think people actually did see it. And
well, you know how it is. You look past things because your belief system is so strong you don't even see them.
It's true. And, you know, of course, René is the one who brought up all of the radiation problems. And,
right.
And just try to imagine, you know, these highly pressurized suits that somehow can withstand, you know, enormous temperature variances. It's 250 degrees above zero on the sunny side and 250 degrees below mm-hmm. zero on the shadow side. So mm-hmm. if you're standing on the moon and your front is facing the sun, and your back is in shadow, there's a 500-degree difference.
500. And those little thin suits were supposed to take care of that.
Yeah, and how do they run? Was it on a battery? What kind of battery?
Water boils at 212? I don't remember.
500-degree difference.
This is absurd.
You'd have to carry around at least a car battery.
No chance. That wouldn't even do it.
There's no way.
No.
And also... You know, people don't realize, but they destroyed the Saturn V rockets right after.
They took them apart. They broke everything to pieces. They melted it down. It's gone. The greatest heavy lift vehicle that we may have ever had.
That's right. I know a guy who was told by NASA to destroy all the Saturn V blueprints. And he was stunned, and he didn't know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And he had like 10 of them or something. He was an archivist for NASA.
Uh-huh.
And he destroyed 9 of them, but he kept one.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
uh-huh.
And he kept one, and he brought it home, and he put it in his attic. And about 5 years later, the FBI came to his door and told him that they knew that he had one of them and to surrender it. And so he went up to the attic, and he got the only last blueprint of the Saturn V rocket and gave it to the FBI. Now, how they knew, I don't know. But these stories are everywhere.
Did, and I guess I'd let him go on that basis.
Yeah, he's a big scientist. He's also the guy who doesn't believe they went to the moon. And by the way, they did go to the moon. They really went there. They dropped the mirrors for the lasers. They put the seismometers on the moon.
They just used another mode of transit.
Yeah, they got there in about 10 minutes, from what I hear.
Yeah.
And, so they probably even set up little places that look like where the Apollo people landed.
Anything's possible with that kind of technology.
That's right. And they're about to nuke the moon, it looks like.
And what's that? What do you make of that? That's a Centaur rocket going to be blasted into the surface of the moon. It's one of the thinnest, stupidest stories I've ever heard to see if there are traces of moisture that they can pick up with some spectrometry.
That's ridiculous.
Of course it is.
What they're really doing, I believe, is they're
sounding
destroying
it?
A base.
There's something there.
Yep.
Yeah, it does sound like a military operation when you really think about it.
Yeah, and they don't want the Chinese and the Japanese to see it.
Could be.
And this brings to mind, a lot of other things, like why are they getting rid of the base?
Mm-hmm.
There's been a profound shift.
Well, the Indians or the Japanese are going to see it.
They are.
That's probably one of the reasons.
Yeah, and then you have to ask the question, well, why don't they need the base anymore? And when you
they got one on the backside.
It's a hugely profound question, and it means that something really important has shifted and changed recently.
Right.
And what that is very, very scary.
Should be.
It could be a disaster of some kind that they know about. Mm-hmm. There may be almost a evacuation going on of Earth, is what I'm trying to say. And by certain forces who believe that something terrible is about to happen.
Something terrible is about to happen.
Yeah, and they're trying to get off the planet before it's too late. And they're moving to another planet.
So maybe they think their underground bunkers aren't going to be enough.
They're not going to be enough. If there's a coronal mass ejection that hits like they say that, or they fear, it's going to literally suck the oxygen right off the surface of the Earth. And everyone underground will just suffocate. So, there's something really profound going on. There's a lot of fear in the elites right now that they're all going to get toasted in something. There's this movie called Knowing, which came out, which is all about coronal mass ejections, a big hit. Of course, the crop circles are talking about that. And I don't know. I mean, at this point, I think that they're actually quite fearful, and they're planning on an evac, or they've already done it. And interestingly enough, the Indian text that these guys translated in the 40s actually names the planet that you need to go to escape. These are 5,000-year-old texts. And they name the planet where you escape to at the time of the coronal mass ejection.
What's the name?
Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm just telling you the information.
Well, wouldn't that be funny? We came from Mars, and now we're going back.
Well, that's what the texts say.
Oh,
and these
really?
Are texts that the elites have had and translated.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that. That's exactly what they say.
Well, we've blown it here, and that's why there's no effort being made by any globalist corporation to stop the environmental rape, I guess, because they don't give it a good damn because it's too late. Adam Trombley told me that the point of no return in terms of saving the environment here came and went in the mid-1980s.
Yeah, it did, and I really believe that. And I think it's on a runaway scale right now of unbelievable proportions. And the way that the sun is acting, the strange behavior of the sun, the sudden appearance of the giant sunspot, very strange and quite frightening if you know the physics of the sun.
I agree.
So, we don't know really what's happening.
We don't know. Jay, thank you for the brilliant paper. We'll leave it up there at the top, and I hope the world takes note of it. The world already has. This site just projects everywhere, and it is getting passed around. And you will get a lot more information, probably enough to do a part two, maybe even a part three on this paper in time.
I think so.
Yeah, good luck with it, Jay, and
thanks so much.
All right, good night. Jay Widener, sacredmysteries.com, an extraordinarily brilliant man. Been a friend of mine for a long time. And, wow. As I like to say, Lots to think about. We'll be right back.